Together Podcast.
Baby aboard. something.
This podcast was recorded live from E3 in front of probably a few people. E3. Be more excited.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the PC Gamer Podcast. We are at day number 2 at E3, and this is episode 277. I have with us the usual gang minus Logan, couldn't be here since his regrets, but wants to say he loves each and every one of you as if you were his own children. I am Chris Komisky, managing editor for PC Gamer Magazine, and with me we have intern Lucas Sullivan.
Hello.
Hi. We have Josh Augustine, associate editor.
It is good to be here.
It is. We have Tyler Wilde, another associate editor.
It's better for me to be here.
I agree. Oh. And we have with us the most senior of all editors, Evan Lai.
Yeah, sure, I'll take that. I can deal with that.
He's so senior, he plays Wii Fit.
Yeah. He's a senior citizen editor, that's unfortunately.
True. I'm old.
So we're going to jump right into the pool of games, and first up in the deep end is XCOM.
What an awesome-looking game from someone who has never played any of them. This game looks
really
incredible to me.
Interesting. Okay,
but I see you guys—you guys are haters a little bit.
No, what's up with that? Not hating. Let's do this. Go on with your impressions, and we'll go on afterwards. Go ahead.
So, like, I'm not super into strategy and turn-based strategy, okay, and all that, but this seems like the perfect mix of, like, oh, I can place a turret here and, you know, use it to help my agents out, or yeah, I can just save up all this stuff and research upgrades later.
Yeah, so just to put it in context, XCOM, without a hyphen,
is hyphen-free.
We've been over this before. It's a first-person shooter remake of the classic strategy game,
uh-huh,
turn-based strategy game, now in real time.
Right.
You know, there's a researching metagame still and things like that. You have a home base. You're working for a, you know, secret area of the
CIA
or something,
yeah,
that deals with paranormal threats called XCOM, of course.
Right.
And you're arriving on the scene and, like, just dealing with alien threats across the continental United States. And they haven't shown anything on it in a year.
Right.
It was, like, this game went dark after E3 2010. Like, literally,
totally
no screenshots, no information,
yep,
no nothing,
yep,
in a year. So this is the first time. And that was presumably so they could rework it in some major ways, which they have. We'll talk about that in a bit. But
yeah,
Lucas, this is your first time seeing it, and you liked it.
Yeah, like, it seemed like that they had a reel at the beginning, like,
uh-huh,
the main character is watching a research reel.
Yeah.
And that seemed to have, like, all the footage they showed about a year ago.
Yeah.
And this was, like, I had not seen the monolith in action or anything like that, or the enemies. And when I first saw, like, the shape-shifting alien with the cubes in his face and all that, that,
yeah,
was, that was awesome to,
okay,
me.
So the enemies we saw, they were called Outsiders,
yes,
I believe.
Yes.
They basically are dressed in these Tron outfits, essentially, and they're made of, like, cubes. So they have, like, those blue lines all over the place, and they, like, mimic people, apparently.
Some of them look like, right.
I guess they're different types.
Yep.
And so basically, from what we saw, and correct me if I'm wrong, you probably saw the same demo, I mean, or the gameplay. We didn't get a hands-on, unfortunately. But from what we saw, it was largely cover-based combat, very similar to Mass Effect 2, for me, anyway.
I could see that. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, but what do you need from, you know, cover shooting?
Well, I mean, just the way you order your troops around, it seemed very similar to, like, using, you know, like, your biotic powers if you had, like, a caster in your group or...
Yeah, it's sort of pausable. I mean,
yeah,
you can, I think it actually just slows it down a lot. It doesn't actually pause,
yeah,
at any point,
yeah,
if I'm correct. But, yeah, you know, the first moment of combat we saw, the character made this huge lunge behind some sandbags.
Yep.
He's fighting some other enemies, you know, some of those humanoid
outsiders. Yep.
Which are also buying sandbags.
Yeah, I know. They're blue sandbags, though, made out of cubes. Yeah.
And, you know, when he's in cover, he activates this mode where, you know, on the screen you see these, like, sort of this arc of buttons that,
right,
represent your AI squad mates' abilities.
Powers, etc.
They're basically, uh-huh, spells. You're like,
yeah,
you're like magic,
basically,
you know. And you can also sort of, like, direct a cursor around that shows what they would look like if they're in cover here, to the left, or in behind these, this object. So, yeah, very familiar to Mass Effect in that way, Mass Effect 2 specifically.
Yeah, and you
other
have a squad.
First person.
I think it was a squad of three, including yourself, if I'm not mistaken.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so again, you know, and basically you can order them where you want them to go, like Evan was saying. The way they were trying to spin it is, it's really about strategy in a sense that a head-on assault with all three of your guys, including you, will never work. Like, for example, we saw them put up this barrier, right? And so what you had to do was kind of like, I think he shocked one of them, took the flank, and then, but they adapted to him taking the flank, but that left their other flank open, and your guys were able to penetrate and get through.
So penetrate the other flank.
Yeah.
Yes.
You had to penetrate the flanks, Tyler. It's important in any situation.
Okay.
Right?
So I mean, just clarifying.
One thing you don't see in Mass Effect, you can't see who your allies are attacking, right? It just sort of happens with or without you?
No, you can direct them who you want to attack. Absolutely.
Okay. This one, like, it definitely looked like it was beneficial to have your teammates attack one target while you went around and
just,
like, popped off.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, again, it sort of felt a little artificial in the sense of, like Evan was saying, there's, like, these just rigid... I mean, this is a beta product. I mean, not even beta, right? It's so giving that to them. But it still just looked like there's random pieces of cover, which I hated about Mass Effect 2. It's, like, it just felt so awkward.
Yeah, I was really baffled. I mean, we all saw separate demos, right?
Yeah.
Did any of the humanoid enemies move in your demo? Did they leave their position?
They were constantly glued behind the cover, crouching and popping
up. Based on what they showed us, this is going to be, you know, again, they made a very short demo. It's very specific.
Very, very early. Right.
But it was a pop-up. It was pop-up shooting segments.
Yeah.
These enemies never left their position, which was boring.
Yeah, I mean, and it just... I mean, the idea seems cool, the enemies. I mean, so when we got to, like, the obelisk, it's this giant thing in the sky that opens up into, like, the Death Star, like, circle and starts, like, evaporating everybody. And it basically rains down lightning everywhere. It has this huge, massive beam, again, just like the Death Star. And I'm not even sure, like, apparently you can capture things or you can kill them. I wasn't really clear on that.
Yeah, you can capture things or destroy them if you're somebody in your party or maybe yourself.
Okay,
has,
so that's
be
like
ability.
A skill to activate
it's,
that.
It's a skill, yeah.
Yeah.
So another thing here, and you know, who's played XCOM?
I played like the
yeah, I played it a bit
forever ago.
So even if you're just slightly familiar with XCOM, you know, like, one of the big things about the franchise is insta death,
right,
of your teammates. That's a big deal. I mean, you develop this character.
Permanent death.
Right.
I mean, they're gone. Yeah, you can't get them back. And we saw some of the recruiting UI in there.
Yeah.
The base sort of projected on the wall. Pretty cool looking. But I was really concerned that, you know, that death ray.
Yes.
It hits one of your teammates.
It is incapacitated.
And it's that seemed, you know, I was really hoping that it just happened to be something they scripted and isn't actual gameplay. That's because permadeath is such a...
It's an integral part,
fundamental
right?
part of the XCOM franchise, and like, you have to live with your decisions, right? That's a huge deal. And again, from a weapon that we've seen in previous footage and trailers, just disintegrating humans. So that seemed really confusing and incongruent to me. Hopefully, it's not going to be incapacitation doesn't make sense. I don't think.
No,
even in XCOM, even with the process of upgrading those characters and investing in them. There needs to be that risk.
Maybe it's an incapacitation ray, not a death ray.
No, it's definitely a death ray.
Oh, okay.
I mean, hopefully there'll be, I don't know, like a hardcore mode or something, or maybe they just didn't make a situation that shows it. I don't know. That was really. I hope I'm conveying how confused I am by that.
No, I was too. That really stuck. I saw it and I was like, oh wait, he's not actually dead. I thought because the reason I thought they killed him was show, hey, you can kill your guys. And he's like, oh, actually, just go over there and run over and re-get him.
Like, they use another ability to cast a shield around him so you're protected while you're helping him up.
Silly me. I thought that was live. Guess not, because the exact same thing happened for me.
Yeah.
But they actually, we had a guy ask about death and, like, why don't these guys die? Like, is it permanent? Their answer made sense to me. Basically, you're investing all this time, like, leveling up skills and all that for these guys. And they're trying to decide whether they should make, like, they're on two extremes, basically. They want to find the balance between making them permanently die and making you just, like, not care if they, you know, get hit or not. So one solution the guy demoing suggested was having, like, them de-level or something, or lose an ability that, you know, you worked hard to earn.
No, that's not enough for me.
That's,
yeah, I'm sorry.
It has to be, like, full on.
Dude needs to get knocked out of the game.
That feels like...
Yeah.
Because then it's just like easy mode. Like then there's no risk, right? Like if you're investing, great. But if you know they're never going to die,
I'm sorry, I don't understand you guys at all here. I mean, no game does that.
In yes, every, they do.
XCOM.
Oh, Mass Effect 2. Okay, if any of your teammates fall, they're permanently gone from the game.
No, but I think they should be.
But that would you just be pissed off at like level 3
right.
when
well,
all
you
but big difference here. Mass Effect. These characters are voiced, have like massive lines of dialogue,
yeah.
have like
right, but
side quests. XCOM, these characters do
no,
not.
No, I'm not saying they're
them.
The same. I'm just saying yeah. no other game does this, so I don't understand
except for
why.
The game is based on.
Yeah, right? I one game like 12 years ago.
Jagged Alliance does
but,
it too.
But
don't,
Josh, isn't that a great way to set this game apart from all the other saturated games in the market is to say, okay, here's something that specifically no one else does.
It is, but that doesn't mean that just because they don't do it, the game, you know, doesn't make sense or can't be good. I mean,
I
don't understand that.
So, okay, fair enough, but the whole idea they're trying to pin on is you have this huge group of guys you can choose from. What's the incentive to recruit new members? I mean, if you have a group of three and you're just going to be pumping them up, aren't you just going to stick with them the whole entire time?
Well, you could specialize for different types of missions. You know, you could have a heavy weapons guy, you know, a more sneaky guy or something like that, or a support character.
I think they need this in the game to sort of reinforce the feeling, and this is part of one of the main three tenets that they described. You're fighting an unknown enemy. You don't know how to deal with it. You have to use your technology, et cetera, but in that way, you shouldn't be expected to, like, you should like, feel comfortable making mistakes and have that be part of the drama of
yeah.
the experience, I think. I don't know. Maybe, you know, again, no one likes losing characters. Not like, oh, that was fun.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I would like to see it as a point of difference and consistency with the original game.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we're just being purists, and that's totally like
that's what PC gamers do.
I mean, in the original XCOM, were the allies just like mindless drones, basically that did whatever?
No, you command them around.
Do they have like personality at all?
No,
not really.
It seems like with this one, like they'll have certain characteristics or specialties or something like that. So I mean, it seems closer to Mass Effect. I don't see the problem with that.
In that way. I mean, you don't talk to them. You don't sex them up or anything.
You don't know that.
You do, yeah.
But we can't say, just sifting off this topic, the art direction is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it looks good. It's very 50s, like, sort of colorful and vibrant. And I think the environment is cool. Just, like, it sort of reminds me of World in Conflict, the RTS game, where it's very familiar soil, right? Like,
yeah, and it's idyllic 19... It's actually 60s, I think.
Yeah, they're saying 50s culture in 1960s, but they didn't really get what that meant, but... Whatever. But yeah, it looks like the 50s, essentially.
It's idyllic America. It's, but at the same time, it's not trying to be like Mad Men or something, you know?
Yeah.
And
nice.
I really like the whole terraforming thing. Like, as you're
corrupting.
Walking around, blocks just like push up out of the ground. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, interesting dynamics. I mean, again, I'm not saying it's not going to be cool. I thought after a year it'd be like totally, totally changed. And it didn't look like they did a whole lot other than basically add the squad dynamic, essentially.
It's a lot more focused on cover. I mean, I'm writing up something for the web for this right now, but the demo shown today compared to last year was very different, actually. I mean, last year's demo almost had an element of detective work to it. You're arriving on the scene and, like, looking for clues. The enemy wasn't clear yet. You're not sure what's going on. You're, like, you see a dog that's been killed or something. You're like, looking... I mean, you guys remember those blob enemies, right?
Yeah.
In the original trailer. Those are obviously nowhere to be seen. They want an enemy that's more readable, which totally makes sense. That was one of my criticisms initially.
Yeah.
You need to have a human enemy to be shooting at.
Yeah.
Or something like that that just operates that way. But yeah, very. These are actually really significant changes, I think.
Yeah. So, from what it is, I mean, I do want to see more. I'm interested to play it. But yeah, I guess, a little disappointed.
I have one single complaint, and I want to see if you guys agree with me on this. The mouth movement when characters were talking looked so fake to me.
It's not final.
That's pretty common. I mean, I do want to throw in here real quick. Logan was mentioning a game the other day, an indie game that was kind of an ancillary item to Serious Sam, but he didn't mention the name. He wanted me to throw it in there. The actual name of that game is Serious Sam Double D. That was one where you can glue all the guns together.
It's a side-scroller.
Yes.
2D.
It looks like Super Metal Slug.
Oh, it's a side-scroller, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was first-person.
Yeah, I thought that, too. When you...
Yep.
You thought
Logan
wrong.
Man, gotta feel something.
So there it is. So we're going to shift a little bit to another awesome game, which we all were anticipating to see, which is BioShock Infinite. Yeah. So, again, Lucas, why don't you... You saw it? Is that correct?
Oh, yes. Okay. Me and Tyler held hands during it.
We did. So actually, you know what? They called his name because he was on the list and I wasn't. And they go in and he's like, oh, Ken. I'm like, no.
No. But then Tyler used his charm on the guy guarding the door.
Yeah.
And it worked like a...
I used my charm and I sat in the aisle while Lucas had a nice, comfy couch.
Oh, I was in the aisle too, dude. I was right there with you.
But
totally worth it.
Oh, fantastic.
But no, you cannot smoke on the podcast, Gary Steinman.
Gary
of PlayStation
Gary Magazine. Steinman bumming a cigarette off of me. Wow. Because I'm the future supplier.
You now have
three cigarettes.
What?
I didn't hear a word of
we
that.
We just exchanged some contraband mid-podcast. That's probably the first time that's happened.
It's on record now.
Do not tell my wife that I smoke.
Okay. Does she listen to the PC Gamer podcast?
Every day.
That's weird because we don't do it every day.
Anyway. She listens to that.
I gave him a bubble pipe. It's okay.
That's good. Yeah.
Moving on.
A hookah? Yeah. Bioshock Infinite. Your first impressions, Mr. Sullivan and Mr. Wild.
Oh my God. That was awesome.
It was fantastic, I thought.
Yeah. Even from the view on the floor, like I was, where you just stare at like a bunch of hair to see.
You know, I mean, it felt weird to me at first because this is such a different feeling than Bioshock. Like just this big populated revolution going on, and just what was his name? The main character,
Bennett. Yeah. No, that's not right.
Bennett, I think it was Bennett. Was it not Bennett?
And the girl just talking and chatting, just chatting up. They felt very relaxed. I don't feel the tension at first, but then I was like, oh, okay, well, there's the tension.
No silent protagonist, which is awesome, in my opinion.
Yes,
thank God. Yeah.
But, the whole... I honestly could see myself, playing with the skyline
just
thing
doing that.
For, an hour. Just trying to, gain
just
momentum.
Going around, yeah.
Because it really is, a roller coaster with a shotgun in your hand.
Yeah.
And that's just awesome.
I'm not sure how that dynamic works, though, from watching the footage.
Yeah, I could see a little, circle appear when he was, getting close to a rail. And I assume he pressed something to latch on to it.
You guys should probably explain what that is and how it works.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Yeah. So I guess the best thing I would describe, I'll let you guys chime in too, but it's basically like a roller coaster in the sky, similar to the Batman ride, I believe, that was at Six Flags, which, if you're not familiar with, is where you just basically hang from a rail that goes all around the whole city. So you have this little hook, it almost looks like a meat hook with gears on it. And as if people can see me move my arm right now. It looks just like this, listeners. So you throw that up onto this. Why do I keep doing that? Chris, you're on the radio, sort of. Anyway, so basically you throw your hand up onto this rail and you can kind of glide around. You can go up or down, it looks like. You don't just have to go down.
Yeah, I guess some mechanism pulls you along.
It seems like something was cranking you up.
Yeah. But then you can jump off of it and hit a rail below it. And I'm doing the arm thing too. Which is the sound of clang and just
chunga,
like
chunga, chunga, chunga,
it was like a roller coaster, but just him jumping, like he has to get up to an airship.
Yep.
And so he's jumping between these rails,
and there's nothing beneath you, right?
No, well, sometimes
bunch of sky.
There's sky, or he's flying over dudes shooting at him, or they're coming the other way shooting at him. And
that's
nuts.
Cool.
It was absolutely
like
nuts.
That.
Now, sadly, I must go, but I just want to say League of Legends is awesome, and I hope to talk about it tomorrow, so you will hear from me then. Until now, I'm off to see Terra.
See ya.
Bye, sirs.
Bye. Bye. See ya.
So, and just to, reiterate, this is just a small, small portion of the demo.
Maybe 15, well...
I mean, it was integral to it, but there was so... Or, I'm not the demo, the gameplay footage, rather. But basically, this is a small part. It's an integral part of the game, but there's so much else going on at the same time. So, basically, a lot of interaction between, what's her name? I don't remember the name of
it. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But, they were getting chatty. It was a very, he felt like a very Nathan Drake-y character, if that's a reference that matters to PC.
I think so. Uncharted.
But a very, very Nolan North-y character, kind
of. Yeah.
If that makes
very
sense.
Very snarky.
Yeah,
and sort
snarky,
of
sarcastic. Bounty Hunter kind of guy.
He might be kind of Indiana Jones, honestly.
Yeah, he was a little Indiana Jones. And he's rescuing her from the Songbird.
Yes.
Which is a giant...
It's crazy. It's basically for me, it looked like a combination between a man sort of robot with a bird head and sort of avian features. And it screams like a thousand women dying at once or something.
Yes.
Whenever it starts, it really sounds like
that's not
women.
How I would have described it. But
how would you describe it?
A thousand children dying at once.
That's probably a better description. Yeah.
But she's been held for 15 years by this thing.
In this tower, apparently.
Yeah. It's that sort of princess in the tower kind of story, but then she gets out and it's looking for her, and she has crazy powers that she doesn't know how to control.
Yes.
And then that's the best moment in the whole thing.
So, for example, Mr. Lottie. Did you went and saw Bioshock Infinite as well?
I have not yet.
Oh, you haven't? So we're ruining everything for
you. Oh, my God.
Okay, sorry.
Ruining.
All right. So basically, she has this power. They didn't really articulate what it was exactly, but
she has something.
It looks like maybe time control or...
Well, it starts out she's trying to revive a dead horse. She has like the power to create life, but she can't control it, and she wants to get off. She wants to get out of there, but she doesn't want to go back down to Earth until she knows how to control this stuff. At least that's the exposition we received before.
Yeah, but the part with the fire truck where it's like Revenge of the Jedi...
That was the thing, is that she's trying to revive a horse and she freaks out, she can't control it, and she fucking like opens a rift and they're looking on a street and it's, Revenge of the Jedi is on a movie theater like thing, and there's a fire truck coming, and then they close it and like,
But I mean, the game takes place in, like, 1895 or 1905.
So she can time travel.
That's
right,
yeah.
So I'm wondering, are you going... are we going to go there later?
I mean, I probably at some point. Or at least it looks like it might meld them together in some way.
Yeah.
Because one of the powers she has, she can actually, like, call in. Like, at one point, you're, like, surrounded by guys shooting at you. And he's like, I need that, like, this huge cart. And so she, like, just materializes the cart to, like, act as...
And you can choose as, like... you're fighting and she's yelling at you like, what do you need, what do you need, and then you can look around and be like, oh, I need a machine gun or I need a cart or you know, some kind of cover, and that looked cool, like a cool mechanic.
It seems like a very handy plot device.
To a degree.
Make things happen.
You're a handy plot device.
Let's see, what else about it? Covered the bird, just the whole, like, the art design in general was very cool, very detailed.
The whole story, I wasn't quite clear on... So, the story, as it was described to me, at least, is that... I should have taken better notes. This idealistic American society was created in the sky.
Right.
And then during the... They were all armed, is what turned out to be the problem, and there was some sort of rebellion, and I forget what specific historical event it was, and they just all killed civilians, and then America disowned this place. And so now it's like a ghost city that floats around attacking the ground below it.
Yeah, like intermittently. I think it was taken over by the Vic, what was the name of the group? Yeah. There's this kind of ruling gang,
sort of.
And
then it looks like now there's like a communist sort of revolution going on.
Yeah.
From what I could tell.
Seemingly.
Okay. So what's surprising? What's interesting? I mean, what is wowing you? What's different from the last Bioshock?
I mean, basically, obviously the verticality of it and the way you can just, like, fly around the level, any level you want.
Is it a game about movement in a way that Mirror's Edge is now?
It made it seem that way, so basically the way you would solve a lot of these puzzles, if you will, like, you can't just, like, shoot guys head-on. You would have to jump up on these rails and sort of use that to sort of get a height advantage, or you would use that to get to, like, a whole other continent and shoot down on them. You could use, like, basically on these rails there's also cargo, like, big train cars that you can kind of, you know, use those as cover.
And you got your standard Bioshock powers, too. He was lifting people up and shooting them, but he also was... Oh, actually, one of the things that she did was there were guys coming down on a rail, and she materialized a cargo thing that just splattered them.
Yeah.
That
was kind of cool. It's definitely Bioshock, like, no doubt
about
it.
Yeah, it is. It's just a very different feeling.
Yeah.
I'm curious, does it still maintain, like, the Bioshock-style level structure where it's kind of segmented, open area, like, you know, you have...
It seems very less corridor-driven.
Yeah.
Very. It's sort of like, corridor, it's like continent-driven now.
It's hard to say based on that, because that's the start of the game. Who knows where it goes from there, but it did seem much more open.
Yeah. Okay. And again, like, a large focus on just stuff coming out of the sky at you, obviously, from all directions.
That's always good.
Yeah, dudes coming all over the place and... shooting
at
you, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, and that's a legitimate question, right? Like, what is awesome about it? I mean, for me, it was just so much stuff going on at once. Like, it wasn't just you using a plasmid and battling, like, a Big Daddy. And, you know, maybe there's some cover you want to have the Big Daddy run into. This was, like, guys flying off rails at you, explosions happening, more guys over there. She's freaking out, you know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just lots of things going on at once.
Were you using plasmids at all?
Yes, he does have plasmids. But I don't know if they call them plasmids. It's like tonics or something.
I don't know what they are there. Yeah.
Same exact thing.
But yeah, he was doing the lift people up into the air thing a lot.
Freeze people.
Oh, he did a bird attack. Did you see?
Yes.
Yeah, he like summoned a bunch of birds.
I have to cut you guys off. I can't wait any longer.
Okay.
The bees, so, yeah.
I have played Mass Effect 3 and I must talk about it.
Fine.
Dude, you know what we're going to do? We're going to talk about Mass Effect 3, Josh.
Thank you. Yes. I tried to wait as long as I could, but it's too long. Well, you guys are talking about birds and stuff. That's too much.
So jealous.
The birds were really cool, man.
How'd you pull this off, dude? So for people that aren't aware, like, not even like, no idea it's even playable. And Josh gets in here and he's like, dude, I'm going to play some Mass Effect 3. And you're like, you are correct.
Yeah, that's actually what I did. I just walked up. I was like, hi, I'm Josh. I'm going to play Mass Effect 3.
I walked up there. I was like, hi, I'm Tyler. Can you show me Battlefield 3? And they're like, oh, it looks pretty crowded to me. this guy walks up and gets a hands-on.
Jedi Mind Trick produces some very good
it does, yeah.
exclusives.
Yeah.
All right, man, let's hear it. Let's hear the dirt.
All right. So it was a very early level. Like, they wouldn't say exactly where it was, but Earth was just being invaded. You're basically cruising on the planet. Captain Anderson was around there as, like, an actual ground soldier, like, fighting alongside you. I didn't get hands-on on the part next to him, but the part right after my part was the part where Anderson showed up and you play alongside him and stuff.
Which part was that?
Sorry. So anyways, you're on Earth. Like, there's the Reapers are invading. Stuff is crashing. Cerberus is there in troops. So it just starts off. You're just like on a crumpled. It looks a bit like the Citadel. It looked like a nice futuristic kind of spaceport, kind of outdoors.
Yep.
The big focus is on the ability to kind of sneak around levels now. You can kind of roll between cover spots and kind of crouch along ledges and kind of sneak along. The best moment of the whole thing. So there's a couple guys fighting in this corridor, but there's like a small little outlet on the right hand side. You can sneak down, go along a planter, and if you don't get the guy's attention, he's looking the other way, you can reach over, pull him over the planter, throw him down on the ground on your side, and stab him in the chest.
That's pretty rad.
With like an energy blade.
No doubt.
It was incredible.
So that's highlighting like the melee obviously is enhanced.
Yeah. So the way the melee works is if you get close enough, it's not an instant kill all the time. But you can either do just like a quick punch.
Yeah.
Or if you like hold it down, you know, you can do a full just like jab. It's like a mini quick cinematic where it zooms in real close to like his chest and you can kind of bam, get him real fast and it'll either knock back staggered or you just take him out completely. Huh. The Infiltrator class, which is the sniper rifle class in the first ones, will also have stealth capabilities now and we'll be able to focus on melee. Like they'll be able to choose sniper rifle or melee. The way it works is pretty similar, the character upgrading, where you invest points into different skills or abilities, but there were a lot fewer points in the trees. I got a chance to play with kind of the character list, and it's more just like upgrade it by 20%, 40%, 60%, 80%, that sort of stuff.
Okay. Which party members were there? I'm sorry to cut you off.
This is another cool part of it. I actually had Liara and Garrus as my actual squad members.
Dream team.
Yeah, is pretty good. But one of my favorite parts about it is all of your other companions are actually down on the ground doing things with you, even though they're not your squad mates. And so, like, I'm gonna get kicked for this, but what is the robot's name? The Geth that's, like, converted...
Oh God. Legion?
Legion, yes.
Thanks.
I sold them off,
to the rescue.
I thought it was lore.
So at one point, you're like fighting along this like edge, and you're kind of trying to secure this area. And all of a sudden, Legion will basically bust through a wall, driving a vehicle. And he's like, securing the area, sir. And you're doing your own thing, and you can see him over there. And eventually, you'll meet up with him, and you'll join, and you'll man the turret on top of the vehicle. So it's like you aren't controlling him, but he's actually there doing things, and like the doctor will be on the other side of a wall kind of working on stuff, and you're securing his area and protecting him. And I just love the idea that your companions aren't sitting on the ship if they're not with you. Like, they're involved, but not in an active way.
They're not having brunch.
Yeah, exactly. They're actually still contributing, like, oh, I know why I have this guy on my team.
Yeah.
And so that was really cool. There was also a female Krogan. Apparently, it seems like she's like a fertile Krogan without like the curse or the genetic deformity.
The genophage.
Dang, Andy Bauman, I love this guy.
You gonna hit that, Josh? You gonna hit that?
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. But apparently Rex gets first dibs.
Oh,
yeah. So, yeah, the whole point of this section of the game that I was playing is you're protecting this female Krogan and trying to get her off-world, because if you can get her to Rex, like, you can secure a treaty with the Krogans, because, you know, here, I'll help save your people, you help me fight the Reapers.
On Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't actually play this part. This was the visual, just the hands-off demo. There's one part where you're going through with Captain Anderson, and you're fighting through this world, and you constantly feel under bombardment, because there's no rest. Like, I felt, like, emotionally, like, oppressed, almost. Like, I couldn't breathe. I just had to keep moving, keep going. Everything is attacking. Then there's this moment. You see this small blonde kid hiding in a vent, and it's, like, this short cinematic with him where he's, like, you know, like, kind of peeking out, and you can go over and talk with him, and, like, you try and get him to come out, but he's like, no, everybody's dying, and, like, you see, like, airdrops in the background, and he's, like, shaking in there, you know, his parents are dead, and he's kind of backing back in. Captain Anderson calls you, you turn, you look, he's gone. But it's this moment where, like, you're trying to convince this kid to come out, like, you can protect him, and then he's gone. And throughout this thing, like, at the end of it, spoilers, at the end of just this beginning segment,
okay.
You and Captain Anderson splits off. Captain Anderson decides to stay on Earth. He's going to help, you know, lead the Earth troops, and you need to go rally everyone else. And as you're taking off, like, all you've been doing is trying to secure these civilians. And you see in the distance, like, boom, you know, the human Navy is bringing in airdrop support. You see, like, the kid and all these other people getting onto the boat, and Shepard makes eye contact with the kid, you know, and the kid, like, you know, kind of the playful, innocent, thanks kind of look. They get on the ship. And then you start taking off. Yeah. And then, bam, Reapers swoop in, just smash all of it. And it's one of those moments, like, when you first saw the kid, you're like, this is why I'm fighting. Like, you get it. This is what I'm fighting
this
for.
This is why we fight.
And then you're just like, oh, crap, it's pointless. We're screwed. Like, as soon as you see that. And it's just, it was very powerful. But, yeah, the combat was, it felt much more, I don't know, Evan could probably help me describe this. Whenever I need help describing gun stuff, I look at Evan. Like, it was more like guttural. The guns didn't feel like energy or laser based.
Energy weapons tend to have, like, no recoil.
Yeah. This
they
was just, like,
they fire, they don't animate.
Yeah. So. It was like tink, 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 tink. And okay. it had this really good sound and really good kickback, just real short. Also, there are workbenches scattered around where you tweak your weapons, where you do the ammo upgrades and stuff. Or not ammo, module upgrades.
Yeah,
the ammo
right.
You can activate anytime. I really hope there's one on the ship, or else that's going to be obnoxious.
Oh, I'm sure there will be.
But it actually changes the visual appearance. Like, you have it, and you can be swapping in parts, and the gun's laid out before you, and it's changing as you're putting on the different modules,
that's
so
cool.
You can see what it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like that it is kind of scattered in the levels, so, you know, if you're having trouble with a part, you know, run back to that workbench real fast, change your gun, get back.
So,
sorry,
go ahead.
It seems like a really specific question, but, like, it seems really strange. But, like, okay, if the whole purpose of the game, and, you know, this has been the structure of all Mass Effects, you go out, assemble a team, come back, solve a big problem. But if, like, Earth is, like, dying right now, like, how are they going to represent that urgency of, like, because you can presumably take your sweet time getting your team together, you know, solving the Krogan problem, doing your thing. Did anybody ask the question?
No, they didn't have...
Is there a time limit?
Yeah.
Is it, like... Are there consequences?
They did talk about, like, it is a Mass Effect game. You can explore the universe. You can do anything you want.
Yeah. Just like a screw Earth.
Yeah. They haven't talked about timers at all. They did use it in Mass Effect 2, but it was kind of hidden. And Shepard kind of has that interaction with Captain Anderson where Shepard's like, well, screw that. I'm staying here. Why would I leave Earth and stuff? And Anderson basically... tells you to leave the planet, and you're like, you can't boss me around.
Right.
And so he throws... So he's evidently been carrying your old dog tags. He throws them at you. He's like, consider yourself re-enlisted. Now get off the planet.
Wow.
And so it's basically... The idea is kind of like the original Mass Effect. Like, it doesn't matter if you save Earth, because the entire universe is going to get destroyed if everyone doesn't unite.
Okay.
And so it's kind of... That's the big point is... when they're talking, Captain Anderson's like, you have to do this. You're the only person that can bring all of us together. And if you save Earth, we're toast anyways.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's just part of Mass Effect, that weirdness of I am going to go mine every single planet before I do any of the main quest.
I am going to go have sexual relations with my crew while the Earth is on fire.
I will definitely, I mean, it's just one of those weird things. I guess that if you're a role player, you can avoid if you want to, but I am not.
It's what the machines don't understand. You gotta have sexy time.
It's gonna make me a better fighter.
Yeah, right. I mean, what's the point of saving Earth if we can't preserve our culture?
Exactly. Right.
You need a high morale to really make these combat decisions.
Yeah. Our humanity is what makes us different from the machines. And that's how we will defeat them, by screwing around with our crew members.
So no inventory, presumably. Again, like.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely different modules like that, but there wasn't an inventory, at least in the build that I played.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Wow.
Did you already talk about Old Republic?
No, not yet.
Oh,
no,
I was like, didn't you see another BioWare game today?
I did, in fact, see the Old Republic today.
Yeah, actually. And
you're probably the only one from all the podcasts that have seen it.
Really?
Tell
us
more. Dang. Yeah, I don't think anybody's had it.
Oh, right.
You're teasing us now.
I saw it last year.
Well, I'm going to tell you what I saw this year, which is way better.
Because I don't remember what I saw last year, so go for it.
Let me flip through my notes to make sure I remember.
Presumably there was a Republic, and it was pretty old.
I wasn't interested in it, and so...
What?
Just kicking it off.
Question number one, Josh. Yeah. Did what you see today reassure you about it releasing this year, or is it going to be next year?
Yeah, no, they told me flat out that this was their last E3. And so, because I was like, oh, so you're showing off all this stuff. They're like, yep, this is our last E3. I was like, oh, we're like, for sure. He's like, well, you know, nothing is guaranteed. But he said, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no way. So, they didn't say this year. But, yeah, I am positive it's coming out this year. I would be very, very surprised if it's not. I mean, they're just throwing everything out there.
Mass Effect's the one we knew would be delayed. This has to come out this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all the classes are there, all the major worlds are there. They're showing raids now, which is the final endgame content. That's really the last thing they haven't talked about. They showed a raid in action today. There is going to be a two-group raid, which is 8-person, and there's going to be bigger, but they wouldn't say hi. From the video, they kept it purposely vague.
Sure.
But I could see anywhere between, like, 15 to 20 people on screen at a time. And these are awesome. It's basically, the one we saw, let me look up the name. It was is on Belsavas. It was Eternity Vault. It's like a giant prison where they've like contained a bunch of robots that have gone rogue.
Robot prison.
Yeah. No, Evan, you will love this. The first boss they showed was a giant like mech with like dual like cannons going and all this sort of stuff. And you have to assault this fortress from the outside. So there's a bunch of turrets. It's not just like dudes standing around. Like, you're assaulting a fortress. You have to take out these turrets, get inside. Then, like, the giant robot comes down and is shooting stuff. It looked pretty cool. And you airdrop into it, which is awesome.
Whoa.
Like, I don't know if that's going to do anything except be an opening cinematic, but it looked awesome.
Good enough.
And interestingly enough, this is another thing that's going to get me kicked. Admiral Akbar... What is this race called? It's not Calmari, right?
Calmarian?
Mon Calamari.
Thank you.
They go delicious with tartar sauce.
They were in the video as playable characters, as Jedi and as troopers.
Oh, really?
At least, yeah.
Jedi Mon Calamari.
Yeah, they were there. He was swinging a lightsaber.
They have fins.
Yeah. No, they got hands, I think.
I thought you just had, like...
No, nah, dude. They're fish face, not fish hands.
Really?
Yeah. All right.
What's the force?
Yeah, and there was also there was a tease for a Jawa companion as well, because they're talking about companions.
Say Jedi.
No,
go ahead.
No, yeah, I wish. And when we were walking around BioWare a few months back, there was a Jawa gear progression artwork on the wall. So, you know, it's got to be a companion in there, I'm sure. They also showed vehicles. I got to play with vehicles for the first time.
Yeah, I saw that in the trailer.
Yeah, it's basically, they look kind of like modified Staps.
Speeder bikes.
Yeah, the speeder bikes, yeah. It's vehicles only. There's no animals at this point. They said they had to choose one or the other, and they thought it would look weird to have wampas on Tatooine and stuff like that.
And, like, how do you balance the speed and make it look right?
Yeah.
You
know. Yeah. So for now, it's all vehicles. Everyone had the same vehicle, but you will be able to get cross-faction vehicles, but it'll be really, really difficult, they said. So, like, Republic can get, like, a Sith speeder or anything like that. Let's see, I played the Sith Inquisitor, which is basically like Emperor Palpatine, shooting out lightning at everybody.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome, and I was talking with Daniel, I totally forget his name.
Aykroyd?
Yes, Dan Aykroyd. He's one of the producers there. He was talking about how he built... Sith Inquisitors can be built as tanks, healers, or DPS. So I was playing DPS, which is the lightning spec. But you can also be a tank, which is kind of like Darth Maul, which is all built on dodging. And so it's essentially fast movements, kind of dodging, fighting two people
at
once.
So you're still face-to-face, but like you have an evasion skill
or
something.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All of it is about like dodging, rolling out of the way.
You're hard to hit.
Yeah, hard to hit.
Cool.
So the way he described it was like Darth Maul holding his own against the two Jedi. Like, he wasn't fighting them. Like, he was basically just, like, staying alive.
Deflecting.
Okay. Yeah.
Until he got cut in half. Hopefully that won't happen to you, Sith Inquisitor.
That'd be unfortunate.
Yeah. Let's see, yeah. And so it's very much like the Jedi Councilar, which is the Republic equivalent. It's like CC, ranged DPS. They mentioned specifically that there are dozens of unique worlds in the game.
Dozens?
Dozens, which I,
more than one dozen, wow.
Yeah, I thought, yeah.
Which you I actually thought was jungle, ice, and desert.
Yeah.
Right.
Swampy. That's
another one. Urban, you know.
Hoth number two.
Urban.
Swampy and deserty.
Yeah. And yeah, they said hundreds of unique locations, including stuff like flashpoints and kind of the instance content.
I mean, yeah. I feel like this is always the thing. It was like certainly a question for DCUO. I mean, tell me if you disagree with me, Josh. It's obviously your specialty, but it's like before an MMO release, it's always this question of like, it's either like this question of, is it going to work?
Yeah.
Like, do the mechanics work? Do the new systems work? Or is there enough content?
Yeah.
Which one is the bigger question for Tor right now, you think?
Does it work?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's going to be plenty of content, just from what I've seen. Because I played through only part, maybe one third to one half of one world in 2 days when I played straight at BioWare, like 18 hours. So, I mean, there's going to be tons of content there. But the question is, my enjoyment of the game has varied from extreme highs to extreme lows depending on the class I was playing.
Yeah.
Like, the Jedi was really boring. The Bounty Hunter has actually been the worst for me so far.
Oh.
And part of that could be playstyle, absolutely. You know, because my favorite one was the Operative. That's stealthy, healing, sniping. That's my sort of thing. But the Bounty Hunter is just... It felt so unresponsive. It was very much just run forward, hit a button, watch an attack. Hit another button, watch an attack. You weren't active or involved or making choices, really. And that's something that can be changed. And I hope they realize needs to be changed based on the feedback they've been getting. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely the problem is right now, if you play, you need to play as the agent. Like, that is just the best class.
Really?
Yeah. And so I hope that's the big problem right now, I think, is just balancing between all of the different classes and making them all fun.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Mr. Lottie for a little Arma 3 action.
Oh,
how
my
is
gosh.
That?
I'll restrain myself and make this...
no reason to restrain.
No, don't. Let it all out.
Putting in context, this is the first time I've actually met the guys at Bohemia Interactive all the way over in the Czech Republic.
Yeah.
Obviously, been writing about them, playing their game for a couple years now. And... Arma 3 is still very early. I'm going to preface it by saying that. So, you know, there's a lot of, like, placeholder foliage and things like that in there.
Yeah.
The animations aren't in yet that they've been talking a lot about, but I got to see the physics system. One way to think about Arma is it's a collection of different technology systems, basically, you know, ballistic system, mission designer, you know, graphics and things like that. And the addition of physics, like, actual real physics.
Right.
Is terrific. I mean, just so refreshing. Anybody that's played the game, I think I wrote in an article or I tweeted or something that like I can mime out all the existing death animations. There's like 10 of them or something. I know what they all look like. I can gesture them out. And so one of the first things that walked me through it again. Arma 3 takes place on the Grecian island of, I get the fictional name and the real name confused. It's Lemnos, I think. And it's the biggest island ever in the game. It's huge. It's the full island. And the first situation they walked me through, we were approaching this facility and there's an enemy on the rooftop. We have a scoped weapon and we take him down and he falls off the roof. He ragdolls off the roof. You know, it sounds like such a simple thing in any other game, but you got to remember, it's a massive sandbox game. We need hundreds and hundreds of square kilometers of space.
Yeah.
Having that amount of graphical detail in a massive game is a big deal. And it looked great. I mean, same thing. The guy that was demoing it to me, Ivan Bukta, lead designer over at Bohemia, threw a grenade at an enemy. Grenade was like maybe 15, 20 feet away from the enemy, and he just face planted forward, just lunged forward, and looked terrific. Also got to see some of the swimming underwater. Didn't see the swimmer delivery vehicle.
Okay.
Yet. But that looked terrific. Just the you know, having flippers on, having that as an animation. Yeah. Really love the idea of just talking over the radio with people underwater as you're approaching an objective. What else? Yeah, just saw some of the actual physics simulation. The most recent screenshots they released showed like a vehicle driving into some shipping containers and knocking them over. That all looks good. Like actual suspension is modeled. So vehicles and armature were just so rigid and so hard to drive and didn't have a lot of personality. They're kind of like boxes with wheels on them in some ways. And just the landscape itself, it's wonderfully detailed. They turned up the draw distance to about 6 kilometers for me.
And it was able to run smooth?
It was.
That seems like a long
There were no hiccups. I mean, wow. they probably had a beast of a system running it.
Yeah.
There were no hiccups whatsoever.
Wow.
And I can really say that, like, they showed up this one specific town on the coast, easily far and away, like, more detailed than any city in ARM existing. More detailed than Zargabad, which is like a Afghanistan town, which is like really taxing on your system when you're playing it. But just more detailed and unique. Like it doesn't feel flat. There's a lot of subtle hills on the coast there. They really picked the right terrain, and I think that's going to really change the personality of the game. That's probably the most. Do you guys have any questions for me about it?
I'm just
going to ramble here on like all the different systems.
Go ahead, Chris.
I saw a badass helicopter.
That was actually when I was actually going to ask if there was like still like aircraft and stuff they're showing, but so it sounds like it.
They showed me the Comanche, which is just a beautiful piece of. It's a helicopter, which actually they only made 2 of them. It was
right.
A prototype, never actually got produced, and.
You were just talking about like draw distance, et cetera. And again, yesterday you mentioned Core i5 probably going to be the minimum, still up in the air. Like, do the graphics look that good, like especially over Arma 2 to you, to like justify that hardware? I know it's rough, right? It's in development still.
It's hard to tell. Like some of their terrain was still using like a lower resolution satellite model terrain still, but I think the amount of objects on the screen is really impressive. The lighting is terrific. The volumetric clouds that they've just added are fantastic. It's not Crysis. I mean, it's not going to have the raw, like, HD quality lighting in every situation
sure.
and things like that. But it's deserving. I mean, just the detail of the terrain. There's such a big difference. I mean, looking at Arma 3 between a designed level and someone that went to this place, took photographs, used satellite model data, and, like, actually represented the real world. I mean, there's such a big gap between that, and it's evident.
Yeah. Okay.
Are they? You know, Arma's strength is just that. It's the world, and it's what you're playing in the world. But they do try to tell like the single player campaign. But you always just get bored of it. Like I never finished a single one of the campaigns, even the DLC. Do you think that they're going to try harder and put more energy into doing a single player campaign?
Absolutely. So yeah. We've got a big preview hitting our current issue about it right now, but it's going to be... The enemy's Iran, actually.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. It's set in the future, which allows them a lot... You know, it's not laser weapons or anything like that, but allows them a lot of freedom just to play with things. And when you start off, you've kind of lost your squad. You've landed on this island of Limnos, and you're behind enemy lines, essentially. You're in enemy territory, and you're going to be an insurgent, essentially, for a big part of the game. Kind of like you're going to amass a squad and have an APC later on, but... You're going to be fighting kind of on your own initially, and I think that's interesting within Arma because you're so used to like how the cumbersome squad controlling mechanics.
Yeah.
That's not going to be a big deal at the outset, at least. And there's going to be mechanics like uniform swapping, for example. So you're going to be able to kill an enemy soldier, take his uniform, sneak behind enemy lines. So yeah, I mean, the thing, you know. They didn't show any squad controlling mechanics for me, but that's kind of what remains to be seen, Andy. I think that's part of the big issue. In the DLC, for example, like just defusing a bomb was like
it takes
impossible like with the interface. So they're still working on that, but right now graphically looks excellent. The systems that seem to be in place.
I mean, just having the sandbox to play in over the multiplayer is just.
Yeah. So I'm totally reassured. I'm gonna be having dinner with those guys tonight and asking them a lot more questions.
Pump them full of alcohol before asking the question.
I can do that, yeah. They'll probably drink me under the table. They're used to drinking that crazy Czech beer and stuff.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. That could be dangerous. Good luck, man.
Thanks. Anyway, yeah. I'm thrilled about it. Go read about it in our magazine.
Do so.
I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
So realism is obviously a big part of Arma. Are they changing the weapons at all, or did you notice any like new updates to that?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, they're using fictional weapons, but they're actually, it's interesting. They're doing it with a weapons manufacturer consultant on their staff, so they're making changes to stuff. You know, like they actually recorded real audio for some of the weapons and things like that. But they're going to composite it a little bit, still make it sound realistic, make it sound interesting. You know, I got to look at a machine gun. I got to look at a anti-insurgent helicopter called the Mi-48, which has like a 20 millimeter cannon, two rotors, like a Ka-58, I think, Ka-52 maybe.
I don't know enough about helicopters.
You should. no. So it has all this massive weaponry, but it can transport 8 people inexplicably. So just these like a transformer. It was just this massive lump of blades and rotors.
Sounds
and
Soviet.
Weapons and yeah, it was, you know, Iranian communist, whatever. Yep. Yeah, but
Communist
so, but it's refreshing. I mean, it's honestly, they need to get away from that, some of that like blueprint level design where they're taking existing stuff and just like, well, how many screws and bolts does it have on the left side?
Yeah,
we got to make sure we get that right, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So would you say it's leaning a little more towards fun and kind of putting gameplay first than on the weapon design?
It's absolutely the same style of gameplay, but they're doing new things. I mean, stuff like. Some people have heard of this grenade launcher. It's the XM-25 grenade launcher. Can air detonate grenades. So basically use a rangefinder to, you know, say an enemy is behind a wall and you see him like 200 meters away. You can't.
I don't mean to alarm you. There is a giant weird bunny like right behind you guys.
Oh my goodness. Oh my
God. And he seems to be molesting a woman.
I'm scared. We need so say you're looking at a guy behind, you know, the corner of a house or something, 200 meters away. You can't put the grenade behind him. That's going to be tough or something. Just say he's like behind like a concrete divider or something. With XM-25, you could air detonate it right above him. You could just dial in the range automatically.
That's awesome.
And take care of him that way. So, you know, prototype technology you're going to see in the game, new stuff, but nothing too wild, nothing like laser guns, obviously. Still very grounded, so...
Cool.
I'm thrilled.
Yeah, that sounds cool, man. So basically, once Arma 3 comes out, like Arma 2, no more reason to play it, essentially. It completely supplants
Arma. There's so many mods and existing content out there
for
it. It's one of the healthiest games in terms of community-supported content. There's always going to be people playing that.
Okay.
But it's definitely going to be the new platform for sandbox war games.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Josh, I wanted to throw it back to you, because you actually mentioned that Neverwinter was a game you got your hands on as well. I wanted to give you a chance to kind of talk about that.
Yeah, I was actually pretty impressed with it. It was a very specific demo. Basically, they're using what they call the Foundry. It's Cryptic that's making it. The Foundry they have in Star Trek Online. It's basically the tool to create let users create content. It was very much like Star Trek Online's, but it was basically refined. It was built after it, so all the lessons learned, of course. In about 30 minutes, they were able to build a full dungeon with quest givers, objectives. I mean, I won't bore you with the details, but it's needless to say that you can fine tune every fine little bit from the quest givers to the text to where the enemies spawn. And you can generate the world and play in it with God mode, essentially.
Okay,
kind of
that's
run around and test it yourself. One thing that was really interesting was that you have the ability to use NPCs and objects in the persistent world to like start your quest. You can use the barkeep that everyone sees in the main capital city. That guy's going to give your quest. And so you can go up to him and you'll get the quest, and you go to a door over here. And it's a certain number of doors in the persistent world dedicated to this that you can choose, or, you know, a flower pot or something like that. They can teleport you to the world. It looked really fun. I was actually really impressed by the graphics. I asked them about the engine. It's the same engine. They've just done a lot of work on it.
Same engine as?
As Star Trek Online Champions.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. It's Cryptic's engine, but I thought it was a brand new engine. The particle effects and like the lighting, like the flames and the effects of ghosts kind of spawning and materializing, like it looked really, really good. I just saw a little bit of the combat because he was playing through his own dungeon, but they didn't have any skills or anything like that. It's just straightforward hack with a sword.
They're totally raw then, like very formative stages.
Yeah, and in that way, the animations, you could tell is the same engine as Star Trek Online. Like, the movements looked really similar.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll be a lot less boring than Star Trek Online's ground combat.
Yes.
Yeah, but it looks very high quality. They hinted towards a free-to-play model. It's going to be digital only. And what they said was, looking back at Cryptic and kind of how they've been changing their business model, you can see what we might want to do. Yeah. So it definitely looks like free-to-play. They were also talking about, they haven't decided yet if they want to do like an iTunes-style let people charge for their content. Not require it, but kind of if they want to facilitate that at all, they haven't decided yet. Yeah, and the coolest part of the character creator for me was you have the full Cryptic character creator, which is almost inarguably the best part of their games, always.
So from Champions.
Yeah, from Champions and from Star Trek. They're going to have that same type of character creator, and you can use that in the content creator. So you can design your enemies, your NPCs, everything from scratch. Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, well, folks, that is the report from day number two at E3. Tune in tomorrow for day three.
Where can they go to find more about your guys' updates and stuff?
Well, I'm sure Evan Lottie would be happy to tell us where they can get that.
PCGamer.com.
Hell yes. Yeah.
And on Twitter, twitter.com/PCGamer.
Mm-hmm.
Neverwinter is coming late 2011.
And they sweet.
Yeah, they guaranteed us this
they
year.
They have to redo that now.
So no.
I'm sorry.
We're doing it live.
All right, folks. So again, tune in tomorrow, and we will be back giving you more info. Later, folks.
Did you hear? It's some sort of video game conference. E3. Welcome to the official podcast of E3. Not actually the official podcast of E3.